This episode is brought to you by Rocky Mountain PBS and 104.7 The Drop. Because The Drop aims to inspire people towards deeper, more meaningful connections with their community through the celebration of urban alternative music, arts, and culture. They're all about creating a unique sound that's locally rooted with global reach. From the morning mix block to new music discovery or to hear your favorite current or throwback hip-hop and urban alternative, 104.7 The Drop has something for everyone. You can listen online or via the Drop 303 app anytime, anywhere. Or if you're in the Denver area, you can catch 104.7 The Drop on air.
Today on CityCast Denver, breaking news. Two things, actually. One, it looks like the Boebert Frisch race in CD3 is going to a recount. Frisch pulled within the mandatory recount range late yesterday afternoon, so we're not done with this one. And two, about an hour later, at the Denver Public Schools board meeting, the board was set to vote on five proposed school closures. But then Superintendent Marrero again slimmed down his list to only two. Math and Science Leadership Academy in Athmar Park, and Denver Discovery School in Central Park. The board was divided, as usual, but not on the recommendation. They ended up saying a resounding no. So the school closure conversation will continue. Check out our November 16th episode for more on the DPS drama, but for now, it's Friday, and we're back in the Lindy Zimmer studio at Westward, and we're talking about the news. Today is Friday, November 18th, 2022. I'm Paul Caroli, and this is CityCast Denver.
I set mine up really high because I have a short torso.
Sylvester Stallone's worst 80s action movie, Short Torso.
I was like, that's not realistic. No.
Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city where you never know who's on edibles.
It's true.
Yeah?
I think that about when I see people driving, barring the snow. I'm talking like regular driving. Sometimes I'm like, is everyone on the street high right now?
Probably some.
Because they're weaving and going 14 miles an hour.
Well, it's something I can't stop thinking about since we did this giveaway, this edibles dinner giveaway after Chef Farina came in. We've got so many crazy stories of people on edibles. It's like, is everyone doing this all the time?
Rue, are you an edibles person?
I prefer my flower in different methods because once you eat it, you eat it.
That's true.
That's it.
There's no going back.
A lot of people don't know that then you eat like non-infused food and it makes you even more high. So it's a real journey.
Oh, we learned this recently, my husband and I, because our friend flew out here from Kansas City to go see the Mars Volta. And that night they had some beer, they had some edibles, they had some mushrooms, they had some weed, but it was the Viva Burrito. Or no, I'm sorry. It was the Tacos Rapidos Burrito they had at 2 a.m. that brought all the oils in and set him off. And we had to call the paramedics. He was fine.
Wow.
It's a real entourage effect indeed.
Okay, well, I mean, I mentioned the giveaway. That giveaway is still ongoing. The deadline for entries is midnight this Sunday, the 20th. So if you have a crazy edibles story and you want a chance to win a private dinner cooked by a world-class cannabis chef, Jared Farina, Chef Royalty, all you have to do is send us a voicemail and tell us that story. The number is 720-500-5418. But we got to get to the show.
Yeah.
Because we got a fun one planned today. Bree has spoken. Bree is here.
Hi, Paul.
And we have a great guest. She's the founder of Rue Black Consulting, a longtime colleague of Bree's at Westward, fellow writer, a longtime champion of the local music scene. And I just learned the rare big fan of metal straws who also has great enamel. Rue Johnson,
yes,
welcome.
I am smiling so affirmatively, especially about the metal straw piece. Please put that on my writer. Thank you. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, Rue, we are so glad to have you here because this week the big news, at least in our world, was yet another hip hop club got shut down, or not shut
it's
down.
It's in hanging in the balance.
Yes. It's Rue Bar on at 34.
No relation.
I know. I was thinking that. I was like, oh, yeah. No relation to Rue. You are R-U. This is R-O-O, Rue Bar.
Root Bar, if you're not familiar, it's at 3480 Park Avenue West. And this is, well, this is just the latest one of these hip-hop clubs that's been targeted by the city. They've been given a show cause order, so that means that the owners are going to have to show up to the Department of Excise and License in December and explain why they should get to keep their liquor license. But Bree, give us the background here. What's the backstory?
I mean, starting in January of this year, it looks like the police have been called several times a month to this bar. The bar's argument here is all this stuff is happening in the parking lot. I think the city is saying these are your patrons. We're talking fights in the parking lot. Someone got hit with a baseball bat. I don't want to say like usual club stuff, but it's not. I didn't read anything I haven't seen before. Unlicensed security guards carrying weapons, a gentleman in full security garb, including a shirt that said security, who then claimed he was not security.
That's a thing, though, right? That's like a fashion statement. Some people wear a security
But he had like an
shirt.
Earpiece and a bulletproof phone.
Yeah, really? You know, tactical gear is there. You can't find that at Charlotte Russe. You know what I mean? It's like,
it could be a fat, you know. He could be a leftover No Limit soldier.
Hey, listen.
You know, we don't know. But they've just had a lot of trouble. Yeah. And I can see where the city is concerned. People fighting in parking lots, brandishing weapons. It's scary and it sucks. But I think the owner also makes this point, which is in the Westward piece by our friend Connor McCormick Cavanaugh, the owner basically says, the city also has told us up front they don't want hip hop clubs here and they don't like hip hop. And his argument is the hip hop crowd is what keeps my business going. So this is who I'm catering to. So I see where the city's coming from, but I also think there's this underlying issue of Denver notoriously finding ways to shut down hip hop clubs.
Hmm. Well, Rue, I want to hear your thoughts on every aspect of this. I mean, what about your first impression off the top?
Well, hip hop started in, no, I'm just kidding. I make those jokes because oftentimes when we talk about hip hop, like how Mos Def speaks about it in his album Black on Both Sides, he said that we oftentimes consider hip hop like the beast that lives off in the hillside and off like kind of this like thing that we don't exactly understand. And I've talked about that a lot in my work because it's important to understand the kind of the culturally relevant delivery aspects of why hip hop exists and then the communities to which it serves. Some of my friends who would like to couch this article as a standard kind of like hit piece on rap music probably might disagree with me a little bit on this. But when I read that article, the first thing I thought was like, don't put that on us, first of all. And by us, I mean hip hop, because there's a difference between working in hip hop and then being a member of the culture of hip hop and then trying to do both things. And I really believe that, first of all, hip hop music is played in all the clubs out here. So there is no such thing as a quote hip hop club because
it's not as segregated anymore. Mm-hmm. Like when I was, you know, in the early 2000s growing up here, it was definitely more like indie clubs didn't really exist, but they certainly weren't playing hip hop until the end of the night. I will never forget. I would go to an indie night and then the last song would be like Nelly.
Which is
you
just
know
like,
what I mean?
Well, it's still your little sister's hip hop, right?
But it also treats it as a novelty versus a whole culture that now is our dominant culture musically as a country.
Right. So, and that's why I think when it comes to like, what we're really talking about here is like actual, cultural connection. So that's why I'm talking about a culturally relevant delivery model. When I read that, the first thing I'm thinking to myself is like, actually in hip hop, we take care of each other and we have a full view and gaze of what's going on. And that doesn't happen at my events, right? Because everyone knows that I will literally get up and drive to your house and rip your television off the wall. Because that's kind of the idea of that's my favorite one to be like, if you mess up my party, I'll rip your TV off the wall. But what I'm making here is that there's like a leadership capacity that's connected to the culture. So people behave a certain way when they are really dialed into the culture. Meaning you come to a Rue Johnson event, you know that we're going to hang out. We might like drink coffee, smoke some herbs, whatever, have a good time.
Yeah, but also going to shows, hip hop crowds are treated way differently. You and I know just from being in this community in the music community for so long, like you said, you go to a show at see the Disco Biscuits at Red Rocks versus seeing who was that Schoolboy Q at Red Rocks and like what happened with that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Wait, what happened
that
with
is such a great example. Thank you for bringing that up.
Tell me what happened.
Well, I was I went to that show.
Mm-hmm, you were there. I remember.
Because I was trapped in Red Rocks
for hours
afterwards.
And we were calling each other, and I was backstage. Whoa. And they were like basically extracting Nas because what happened essentially was Schoolboy Q had been in town and played the Ogden previously. Mm-hmm. During that time, he jumped into the crowd and like slapped someone or threw a cup or something completely ridiculous. So he was not Denver's favorite artist. He returned to Red Rocks playing the Flying Lotus, Nas, right. Something on the Rock, Feed the Rocks. Yes. It was supposed to be like some sort of a nonprofit event. And my good friend actually was his driver. And they said that a person just came out of like the shadows at Red Rocks. At Red Rocks, okay? At Red Rocks. Can you imagine an emergency at Red Rocks? Like, you're toast. And yeah. they pulled out a gun and my good friend like Jeez. Actively saved Schoolboy Q's life. He got shot, the manager got shot, and he like raced them down Santa Fe. And that's what ultimately saved their lives. At Red Rocks, can you imagine? And then meanwhile, people are inside like seizing to Flying Lotus, right? Like raging around, you know, and that's like a real like operational emergency. And it was not necessarily, quote, blamed on hip hop because it was at Red Rocks. What do you think about
versus
that?
Versus the venue being one where we, quote unquote, usually see the hip hop crowd.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Hmm. So what are the good clubs now? Where are the best places? Where are the cradles of hip hop in Denver today?
So, well, you know, again, to go back to my initial quote, quoting Mos Def, you know, he says, if you ask me where hip hop is going or where hip hop lives, I tell you that's where I am, right? That's where I live. And that's important because when we say things like, well, where is hip hop or where can I listen to this music? You can listen to it anywhere. And it's sometimes I want us to be very specific about what we're saying. So the question really is, where does the urban community exist safely? That's one question.
Yes.
If we're asking, where is the cradle of hip hop? I could tell you it's at Ophelia's, you know, where that's really a great place set up for people who play in bands and do that kind of
awesome
music.
Venue.
I love Ophelia's, okay?
I do too.
But my favorite place is actually Cervantes' Other Side, because I've seen like Kitty Crimes play that place and blow it out. And then I've seen like
Bahamadia.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've seen like West Side Boogie. I mean, it's just my favorite place for real to see live music. But if we're asking where is the urban epicenter in our community where people can exist and hear the music and whatever, the real place is Agave Shore in Five Points.
Huh. Agave Shore. I don't think I've ever heard anybody talking about Agave Shore before.
I brought the heat for you, Coco.
I love it.
Agave Shore.
Okay.
Number one, I don't actually drink tequila at all, because if I did, I would just promptly go get my guy Paul here. We'll go get on the mic. You know, it just gets crazy. So I don't drink tequila. However, it's a like a tacos and tequila bar. They have other spirits, mm-hmm. but that place is in Five Points in the little plaza, and it's black owned, and it's really an epicenter for, it's like, that's Black Cheers for sure.
Right by Spang-a-Lang?
Right connected, okay. Literally on the same little path.
Mm-hmm. I know it.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah.
But you're making a great point, because that where the community gathers, where people come around to connect with each other, and music is the underlying piece of that, is very different than the place you go to brunch that plays Dilla's Donuts.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, like, it is. Yes, yes. Or like, even, I guess what I'm also saying is that like hip hop is the soundtrack of many cultures. And I think in general, there's a hip hop song that can be pointed to for lots of different things that we're experiencing. And we don't necessarily see that kind of like tactical disturbance that we're talking about with Rhubarb. The other problem with Rhubarb, just to kind of note, is that strategically, I guess operationally, it's positioned in a terrible place. When I went there the first time, it was like trivia and chicken wings. And then I went back recently and it was like Coachella, you know? So I don't know what the difference, you know what I mean?
That's kind of my take on it too, was like, it's been around in many iterations over decades. It was in Cherry Creek for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that was the crowd, you know what I mean? The crowd, I don't understand. I don't know what the crowd is either then.
Because that area, so the other thing is I was reading up all of the Google reviews, because I was like, what are people saying about Rhubarb? Because there's a gang of reviews because it's been around for so long. So when you look first, it's like, oh my gosh, I came in and I paid ping pong or whatever, I don't know any games, but I like played this game and then I ate some chicken wings and I answered some questions on Jeopardy and it was whatever. And then you start to see like, I was there and a man got hit in the face with what, you know? So you can see
so
when it
changed.
Yes. And I don't know, But that area is very interesting because it's not necessarily like Cherry Creek or Hale or whatever, right?
No, it's kind of no man's land because it's like right under the viaduct. If you've never been to Rhubarb, if you're coming out of the city on Park Ave, no, is it Park Ave or 20th? It splits out and it's like you can go to 38th, you can go to I-25 North, I-25 South, maybe I-7. I mean, it's just like a viaduct and it's kind of tucked away in this corner, which can be awesome in a lot of ways because it does often mean the rest of the world leaves you alone. But it also can mean wild shit.
It also means if you live in that apartment building right there and you're thinking you're going to go down to the Starbucks and get a little cortado or whatever, you might run into like, because of the way it's positioned. So that's what I'm talking about structurally, factually. The other problem with Rhubarb is that it's just in a terrible place for there to be like problems. So, you know, when you go to Vinyl, you know, when where Old Westward used to be, that parking lot behind the building that's across from Temple, I used to live there a million years ago. And it would be like, you know, World War III out there after the club sometimes.
Yeah, we're talking about the strip of clubs on Broadway.
On Broadway, yes.
Around 11th and 12th.
Yeah, but it was tucked behind that big building. So no one was really seeing it. But in Rhubarb, if you're in there, if you're at a, you know, if you live over there, if you're at the little veterinarian place, got a stray shot. I mean, it's just not set up for the kind of, I would say, operation they have.
What do you think about the owners kind of putting it on hip hop and saying, we can't make any money if we don't play hip hop? How does that feel to you as somebody that produces events for the community?
It feels like red herring, right? It feels like a, you know, what my, I guess what my hipster friends would call a nothing burger. What the hell are you talking about, my boy? Now, I'm speaking as a consumer because I also exist in this community and I can go wherever I want and I should feel safe.
Right.
That is not what that person is talking about. I read that quote and I really felt a little bit like what you are painting and the way you are contextualizing this is almost more dangerous than what we are actually talking about, because you're saying, oh, well, I can't make any money if I don't play hip hop. Okay, that's fine. But you know what? When I go into the little coffee shop in my neighborhood, the little baristas, they play the dopest, like downbeat lo-fi stuff. And I've never once been pistol whipped by a barista in there. Okay.
So he's just passing the buck, not taking responsibility.
I think that it's that version of it of blaming hip hop for problems that exist. To me, that is the same kind of
couching. He's not even defending hip hop as I initially took it. Was like, oh, okay, yeah, I agree. The city's not treating hip hop clubs right. But he's not actually.
That's why I was saying I
feel you. Okay.
I'm like speaking as a consumer, but also as someone who works in the industry. And I had some conversations with people who we know who, you know, are promoters and stuff. And I was like, no, we have to explain that this is a bad actor. So in the cannabis community, if you are operating in the regulated market, you can't go and do nefarious things that operate from the perspective of having people question you. Right. Mm-hmm. To me, what we are reading in that article, you know, I don't know. Whatever, but what we read in the article, to me, that is a bad actor. And they would not be happy that I said that, but it is the truth. And the reason why we have to operate in that way is because these people own this club. They also own many other clubs, and they, you know, of course, we talk about Beta and all these other places. I want hip hop to be able to exist, and I want to be able to operate in any genre, in any place in this community. And we need to operate safely.
Well, I think that might be the right place to end this part of the conversation. I think you put a really nice button on it. But before we move off of the nightlife scene, there is one other piece of news that I want to get y'all's take on. This was I read it in Westward, but the news was around the old Chapultepec building down by a ballpark. It was purchased by the Monforts, and
they own the Rockies.
Oh, the
Monforts.
All right.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Right across from
literally across from Coors.
I went to my first baseball game earlier this spring, had a ball.
Anyway. You liked it. Oh, that's great.
They gave me a certificate because my friend, it was ridiculous. Anyway, I loved it. I had so much fun.
Well, I mean, now baseball fans are going to have a new place to stop for a beer before or after the game, I guess, because they're talking about converting the old Chapultepec space and the space next door to a new, bigger venue that they say is going to have some jazz elements. But
why?
I don't know. What do y'all think about the old El Chapultepec space?
I feel like let it be. Like, let it rest. It was what it was. I think reading all the coverage of El Chapultepec's closure, the owners consistently said the baseball crowd is the majority crowd around our venue, and they have no interest in what we're doing here. In fact, it makes most of our patrons annoyed, I think, that they have to deal with it to get to the jazz club. So I would almost feel offended. It kind of reminds me of, I really enjoy Carbon, which is now in Paris, on the old Paris on the Platte space. I like that place. I don't love that they have pieces of the old Paris on the Platte hanging on the wall in frames.
Do they?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I love that place.
It's great. It's great. I mean, it's a great place, but that's how I feel this might go. It's like, here's this wall of jazz photos of guys no one in this current establishment cares about.
Yeah, right. Want another Jaeger bomb?
Yeah, like, why would you do that? So, I mean, strategically, the Montfort's buying the bar catty corner to their massive, I mean, they're gonna, yeah. I joked about this yesterday on Twitter, this is gonna be Montfort Town down the road from Cronkyville. They've got McGregor Square, they've got Coors Field, now they've got El Chapultepec, and we won't know 10 years from now, if you didn't know El Chapultepec, you have no idea that it was there.
Yeah, and putting something on the wall, like in a frame, doesn't do the actual justice of like making sure people respect the culture of what that place was, in my opinion, right?
Right. Well, you can't. I mean, that crowd is not interested in respecting the culture of this being a stop for jazz musicians from all over the world.
I drank whiskey in there and listened to Jessica Jones like play. It was just one person playing the guitar and her like singing, and I just like immediately felt like I was like back in the 60s, because it was like just me. I should have been like smoking a cigarette and crying over a man, and she was like wailing so hard, and I was like, this is actually perfect. Even though there's not that many people in here, this is the kind of place you go to hear that. And I don't know, maybe that will be kept there. I don't know.
But you aren't going to want to go down there.
Not on
game. No, ma'am.
On
game. No.
Fight.
But you know what? You know what's across the street?
Yeah.
El Tejon, right? It's like a Mexican place, and they own the place that's called Loaded right next to it. And do you know that every single Tuesday, more than 500 people show up for Taco Tuesday? DJ Squizzy Taylor, that's where the hip hop is. He hits me up. He's like, oh, come. He's like, oh, come and like hang out on the roof. You know, you can sit down. And I'm like, oh, street tacos. I'm hungry. I show up. They take me up through the elevator. There's a line down the block. I was like, oh, maybe these tacos are popping. I go upstairs. Yeah. They open the door, and it's literally Coachella for real. It was turned up. So Squizzy Taylor is putting like 500 plus people in there on Tuesdays.
That's a hot tip.
I know. Also, like, I think Taco Tuesdays are kind of BS, but I would go for a good DJ.
I went in there looking for the tacos for real. I was like, where are these chicken tacos?
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with a fun segment.
Winding through the canyon, her anticipation rose. Monarch Casino Resort Spa, the epitome of mountain chic. Her pulse raced as she sat down at a high-limit baccarat table. Hungry? She chose the Southwest Fusion flavors of Bistro Mariposa before ascending to Bliss, a top-rated spa Monarch, for a signature massage treatment. She slept well in her luxurious hotel room, fulfilled by her stay. Write your own story at monarchblackhawk.com.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, it's Bree Davies, host of CityCast Denver. Growing up in Denver, it took me a while to find my place in the city. I wanted to understand our city's politics better and how they impacted things like the arts community, which is where my heart is. That's why the mission of CityCast Denver speaks to me. We spend all day, every day, finding the most compelling stories, the most exciting people, and the best insider recommendations so you can make the most of this city and also make the city better. Members of CityCast Denver make that possible, and we could not keep doing this work without you. Become a member of CityCast Denver today at membership.citycast.fm and get exclusive perks like ad-free listening, event invites, and members-only updates. That's membership.citycast.fm. Thanks.
And we're back. All right, so we're not talking about news anymore. Instead, we got something fun to talk about. This one comes from you all, our wonderful, brilliant listeners. One of you recently sent us a text message with a very interesting question. They say, there's a TikTok trend of where I would take you in your city if I hated you. I'd like to hear the answer to that question from the hosts. So this came in a couple weeks ago. I've been thinking about this, struggling for weeks. Rue, Bree, who wants to take that first?
I want to hear Rue's take. I'm so ready.
If I hated you and we were in Denver, I would take you to a sold-out show at the Ogden and make you park in the Wendy's parking lot. You want to know why?
Wow.
Because only people who are really from Denver know that your car will get towed. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a trap.
It will get towed. I was taking a guest of some philanthropists out, and he met me at Corday, this rap show. I was like, okay, this is great. Real suited up, man. Mm-hmm. And I get there. He's already there waiting for me. I was like, what are you doing? He was like, oh, I parked right there. And I was like, oh, no. And then sure enough, we saw his Tesla getting towed within 2 minutes off of that. I was like, it got towed off of Colfax. That's pretty hip hop to me, you know?
I love that.
I would take him to the Wendy's parking lot.
You know, I had parking in Cap Hill, but that's way more specific. That's so much better.
That's so good. That's so good. That is a trick and a trap people fall for all the time.
All the time still. Yeah. Fillmore, that people just park there. It's like, you're going to see them.
You're like, you know that guy that took $15 from you does not work right? in that park. That parking lot is not a, it's that's a Wendy's parking lot.
That's a raincoat, not like a construction coat. Like, what are you doing?
All right, Bree, what do you got? Where would you take me if you hated me?
Well, I'd start with taking you down to Lodo for either opening day or my people's holiday, St. Patrick's Day. If you want to be around the worst people in Denver who are wasted at 11 a.m., Lodo, right around Coors Field, is the spot. Mm-hmm. The most annoying drunk people you've ever seen. And I'm not saying this as a sober person. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that even when I was a drinker, I didn't go do that because it was awful. And then I'd probably take you to dinner at Hacienda Colorado if you want the worst white people Mexican food you've ever had.
Hacienda, I don't know if I've ever heard of this.
Mexican food with altitude?
No. What is this?
Oh.
Rue, have you
I've
know
not
this?
Been there, but I've heard, I'm familiar because it's kind of like the gag that it's bad.
Okay.
Awful.
Where is it?
The one that I'm thinking of is on Colorado Boulevard at I-25.
Yeah, like south.
Oh man, I'm there's a couple past it all of the them. Time.
Oh, I'm sure you do, and you don't even notice it, and don't bother to go there because it is the worst food in the world.
Kind of curious now, actually.
Well, but you know, I've never been to Casa Bonita, but that's another show. I know that I see your tweets about it all the time, and I'm like, is the
when
food
it
that
reopens?
Bad? Okay, we have to go.
We'll go.
Okay, mm-hmm.
we'll go.
Well, I've got one.
Yeah, I was like, Paul.
I this one is like it's kind of personal, but I don't know. Rocky Flats. You all know Rocky Flats?
No.
Rocky Flats is, if I hated you, I would invite you on a hike to the beautiful Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge.
And hope that I don't Google Rocky Flats.
Yeah, well, and then we'd get there, and then I would reveal that it is a former nuclear weapons plant that a lot of people think is still dangerous. I personally think that the $1 billion cleanup, you know, seems like it was run pretty well. But we could go there.
Radioactivity here, huh?
We could go on a little hike. I could talk about it for too long.
No, I was like,
stroll through an old,
like,
hollowed out silo or something, see what's really down there.
All right, well, listeners, we want to hear from you too. Where would you take us if you hated us? Yeah, leave us a voicemail with your name and neighborhood. You might hear it on the show. Our number is 720-500-5418. Again, that number is 720-500-5418. Well, Rue Johnson, Bree, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rue.
Fun.
Oh,
super fun.
This was so fun.
And finally, normally we wrap up our Friday shows with a little recommendation for your weekend, a little roundup of all the cool stuff happening in Denver, but we already agreed that there's really only one place to be the weekend before Thanksgiving in Denver. It's a little bit different this year, but this Saturday, people will be coming from all across the metro area to help pack up Thanksgiving meals for those in need. It's the annual Feed a Family Drive in honor of Daddy Bruce Randolph.
Who you may know as the street name, Bruce Randolph, or the school over in Northeast Denver. But Daddy Bruce also was this amazing gentleman who moved here from the South in his 60s and for 30 years ran a barbecue restaurant that regularly fed the community, whether you could afford to pay or not. And he did these annual events. And I talked a little bit with Councilwoman Candy Sayabaca about her personal experience being a recipient of the Feed a Family box, but also going on to be a leader in helping the community put those boxes together and bring people in to do that work with her. So here's a little of that conversation.
Did you guys just get off of another interview?
Pretty much. It's been kind of crazy today.
I know. I'm jumping from Zoom to Zoom myself.
Oh, Zoom life. Councilwoman Candy Say-the-Baca, welcome back to CityCast Denver.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm thinking about Denverites who maybe didn't know Daddy Bruce or Reverend Wooding or haven't been a part of this event before. Why do you want folks who aren't familiar with it to know and care about this event?
You know, this is something I started getting involved in probably when I was about 12 years old. Our family had been a recipient of the food boxes. And we knew that it was always a place that we could go when we needed food for Thanksgiving. And so by the time I got to middle school, I had started an after-school job with the Urban League. And one of my favorite bosses of all times, Randy Craven, he used to make it part of our job that the youth staff had to go and volunteer at Daddy Bruce. And I had never actually been a part of the packing boxes until that moment. But when I saw the community effort that goes into it, it was just one of those moments that really showed me what community was all about and inspired my love for the work that I do and have done my whole career. When you get there, it's a sight to see all of Bruce Randolph for about 3 or 4 blocks gets shut down. And there's a huge conveyor belt in the middle of the street and hundreds of volunteers in the best holiday moods, packing boxes that'll get sent to families all over the city, but primarily in the 80205 zip code. And that is amazing to me, but it blows my mind to think of how the event originally started. And it was Daddy Bruce in a restaurant cooking food for all of those same people, and people just coming up and grabbing their food and sitting down in the middle of the street at a table or taking it into the restaurant and breaking bread together for the holidays. That's what it's about. And giving people an opportunity to just help someone out.
Also, I think it's important. Daddy Bruce was in his 60s when he moved to Denver and he decided to, you know, to start a restaurant. This was like his second act in life, was to serve people that he was just getting to know himself. And by the time he passed on in the 90s, he was like, I mean, I knew who he was as a kid. And I think that that's so cool to think about this one person's drive to bring everybody together to help each other.
You know, that's one of the reasons that I fight so hard for community. When I was growing up, it was easy to know a person your whole life, to live next door to someone your entire life and multiple generations. And when you had that kind of connection to each other, I think it was easy for people to just take care of each other no matter what it costs. So for me to like honor someone like Daddy Bruce, but also Reverend Wooding, is, you know, part of my culture.
Can you tell me more about Reverend Wooding? Because I have to say, I'm not as familiar with his story other than I read a piece in Denverite that kind of talked about how he got involved. What can you tell us about who Father Reverend Wooding was?
Wow. Reverend Wooding was really someone who lived his entire life to honor someone else. That's a different level of a community servant. You know, Daddy Bruce lived his life to serve the community and keep the community fed and happy and healthy. Reverend Wooding lived to keep Daddy Bruce's legacy alive. And so he was the one who did the major pushes for fundraising. He was the one that kept the core volunteers engaged. He was the one that got the media engaged, that established many of the partnerships year after year that guaranteed the ability to feed over 12,000 families every single year.
So for listeners who are learning about this for the first time, how can they help out this year?
They can definitely donate. I can provide you the links, but they're pretty easy. bit.ly/DaddyBruce 2022. But also just showing up. You don't need to sign up to volunteer. Just show up on Saturday at any time. Get there as early as you can. And you'll see people lining up in the street and unpacking boxes. All you got to do is go inside the church. They'll probably have signs where you can go grab a t-shirt and they can put you to work. But I think the best volunteers don't really need the instruction of what to do. They see what's happening on the line. They get in where they fit in and they get to work.
Yeah, it's not complicated. Just literally show up.
Yep. Just show up. There are veterans who show up every year who will be more than happy to let you know what they need your help doing. And you can be one of those people when you see an empty station on the boxes, you know, fill it in, help someone see that they can fill it in. When things are running low on the unpacking, unpack something. It's very easy. It's also a time to know that even if one year you were on the packing and giving and volunteering end of things, it's okay for you to come back and be on the receiving end too.
I like that sentiment. I think it's important for us to not differentiate and just understand some folks are here to serve, some folks are here to receive, and that can go either way at any time.
Yep. That's like going home for the holidays. That's grandpa's house. That's where you go, regardless of what your needs are, to get filled in a range of different ways.
And that's all for the week here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were me, Paul Caroli, Lizzie Goldsmith, and Aaron O'Toole. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter, Hey Denver. Bree Davies is our host. Our music is by Los Mocochetes, with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, follow us on Twitter at CityCast Denver, and tell your worst enemy about us the next time you see them. You can sign up for that daily newsletter, Hey Denver, by texting Denver to 66866 and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week.